Hey mama, Shaz here. I'm a millennial mama to a toddler, a makeup artist, plant mom, and editor at Sassy Mama. Join me as I chat with other cool mamas and dads to get the scoop on family life and of course, top tips for getting your babies to sleep through the night and how to help your tweens go completely device-free. Just kidding, but we'll try our best. Welcome to the Sassy Mama Unfiltered podcast. Welcome back to Sassy Mama Unfiltered. Today, we are chatting with Amy Bell, mama and entrepreneur behind Singapore-based online butcher The Meat Club, and also sidekick marketer behind Guzman and Gomez. So she'll be talking about her fertility journey, eventful births, and her experience with seeking professional help for her maternal mental health. So we understand such topics can be a bit sensitive to some listeners. So we do hope that you keep listening with this in mind, or you can also take a pause and decide if you'd like to continue. So without further ado, hello Amy.
Good morning.
Hi, how are you?
Thanks
so much for coming down. So we have been in touch for a few years now, thanks to your partnership with Sassy Mama. But I feel like this is the first time we're actually sitting down, having a conversation, having a chat. Yeah, so thank you so much for taking the time to come down and actually speak with us on this. I know you now have two beautiful daughters, of which you had in Singapore.
I did.
But of course, you did share before about how it was quite a journey getting to where you are today due to your issues with, you know, infertility and, you know, a myriad of other things that actually got you here. So first off, I guess I'd like to ask, when did you start trying before you had kids, and at which point did you start seeking professional help for it?
Great question. I guess for us, there was never really a particular moment in time where we started trying. Thankfully, I've been with my husband for a number of years now, and after we got engaged, I think we kind of relaxed a little bit in terms of in terms of trying for having kids.
Yeah.
And to that point, I guess we just thought it would happen quite naturally after we got married. We weren't necessarily trying again. It was not a conversation that we'd had. We just thought that things would happen relatively naturally. But for one reason or another, my period actually stopped.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, for a certain period of time. And I started just exploring why that was happening. So I went out and saw a GP, got some blood tests. Everything came back relatively normal.
Right.
And then I went and saw a local gynecologist, and she had a look as well, and she actually shared with me that I wasn't ovulating, and that came as a real surprise because I was actually getting my period,
right?
And it was not known to me that you could actually have your period
without having eggs, having ovulated.
So her immediate advice at the time was to go on some hormonal medication, which I politely declined purely because I felt like I was still young. I think I was 30 at the time.
Mm.
And I felt like time was kind of on my side.
Right.
I also had come from a family where I guess my mum grew me up to look at alternative integrated medicine in the first instance. So my theory around getting sick, and this is something I apply to the kids even today, is to treat the cause, not the symptom.
Right.
So if you have a headache, are you dehydrated? Of course, I would give my kids a Panadol if they were in pain. But I also think that we tend to look at addressing pain and symptoms before we look at the
without
root cause.
Like finding the solution. Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess that took me back to a journey I'd started in Australia prior to moving in Singapore, where I had seen an acupuncturist.
You saw the acupuncturist in Australia?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So this goes back to pre-children, pre-engagement, obviously pre-marriage. And I had seen her because that was a period in my life when my period actually had completely stopped. And she got me back on track to the point that I could tell you the day, time, and hour that it would come.
So that means when that happened when you were 30, actually it wasn't the first time. Your period had stopped before.
Yeah, it was the second time.
Oh, wow.
And so in that instance, when I was in Sydney, I sought an acupuncturist out, again, having gone to see a GP who had told me that everything was fine.
Yeah.
And the acupuncture had thankfully worked very well and in my favour. So fast forward to being in Singapore, I was actually quite surprised that when I went to go and find an acupuncturist, my experience in Australia and Singapore were very different. Not saying that one was better or worse, but just in the way that I think acupuncture was viewed in Australia, I remember feeling like it was a very warm, caring environment that it almost felt like you were going in for a massage.
Oh, nice.
It's very relaxing.
Yeah, I guess it's very, all those like alternative healing methods are a lot more welcome over there, right?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. And, you know, there's no shortage of acupuncturists here and some great practitioners for sure. However, it just felt very clinical. So the places I'd go to, it was like very bright, you know, medical grade lights, white coats, masks.
You're talking about the ones in Singapore.
Yeah. And just it wasn't as relaxing. And I think that's kind of key to alternative medication.
Yeah.
So fast forward back to Singapore, I kind of went on a bit of a hunt to find the right type of practitioner that I was after. And thankfully I met a lovely fellow, Kong, who helped me. What I think, and everyone's experience is very different, start to not only have more regular, heavier periods, but also to ovulate. Yeah. And lo and behold, maybe 4 months later, we conceived Harriet. So naturally.
Okay.
So I hadn't taken the hormonal medication advised from my gynecologist, and I'm sure that had the acupuncture not worked, that would definitely be something that we would have considered and spoken about as a couple. It was just, I was just very thankful that the alternative medication in that case worked.
Yeah, yeah. So how long would you say you were actually trying before you got pregnant?
I'm so bad with remembering years.
It does feel like it was a long time ago now. I mean, like,
I really envy people that can remember dates and times very well. I, for one, cannot.
I'm the same. Your eldest now is 6, right?
Correct.
So, of course, like, you know, we're talking maybe 7,
yeah, so
8
I
years
think,
ago.
Yeah, we were married in 2013, I'm going to say. And Harriet was born in December 2015, so
okay so
it was quite some time,
right
yeah.
But did you definitely expect, like, okay, after I get married, it's like, gonna be so easy to get
absolutely
pregnant? Because it because it just looks like it came so naturally to other people.
It does. And it did. And I have to say, I also think that comes down, and this is a separate topic altogether, but just as girls growing up, you know, everyone's so concerned about protection, which is fantastic,
right,
and avoiding it, that I think the mentality is, oh, you know, when I go off the pill, things are just going to click into gear.
Yeah.
But that's like not the case. I was very lucky to have been off the pill for quite some time before we were even considering it. But I can imagine that had I not, it may have even taken longer again.
Right. Yeah. I mean, because birth control is also, it's like a hit or miss, right? Like sometimes some people do get off of it and then suddenly they, you know, are back to, you know, being fertile again.
Yeah.
Whereas some people have trouble even starting because of that worry that, okay, if I get off, I don't even know if I will be able to get pregnant after
Correct.
That, you know? Correct. So that's quite a big thing here in Singapore, I think, you know, among, especially like my Malay community, you know, it's like a natural next step. Okay, after you get married, definitely you're going to have a baby. But at the same time, you know, you have to have some family planning in mind. Not everybody wants to have a baby immediately after that. So, like, me and my husband, we gave ourselves a year, like, before we were like, okay, now we are ready to have kids.
Yes.
And luckily, it did happen, like, naturally and not, you know, for us. And we didn't have to go through any, you know, extra treatments or anything. But there definitely was that worry of, like, okay, I'm trying to avoid it now, and then what if, like, the universe or God hears it, and then it's like, okay, so you don't want to have kids, right? I won't let you have kids. You know, like, and it's okay, now we really want it. So yeah, I guess it's quite interesting that you did go through the acupuncture method, and I know that people try all kinds of things, right? What other, like, alternative healing methods have you heard about for fertility?
Oh god,
I know there are like massages and what else, all kinds of things.
There are. I mean, I do also recall taking Chinese herbal medicine. Mm,
yeah, TCM, yeah, a huge one here, yeah.
Yeah, and I know they come in tandem, but wow, some of those were like drinking,
oh, right.
drinking dirt, yes. Which is fine. It's kind of what you expect, mm-hmm. but yeah, quite pungent.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They have those like really strong herbal
very
drinks.
Very earthy.
Yes, yeah, very yeah, earthy. Yeah. We have those in like Indonesian practices also, jamu. You know,
okay.
Yeah, which is, yeah, a lot of herbal stuff that's put into it. And it's like almost undrinkable, but you have to take it for
oh
the
gosh.
Body.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, exactly. So while you were trying to conceive, I mean, I guess we could say that was about 2 years of like trying, right?
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Or maybe no.
No, a year, probably like a year plus. And a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
A year and a couple of months.
Right. Like, did you feel any pressure from family members or friends?
Thankfully, no. Mm. I mean, you obviously get the usual questions around, you know, when are you going to have a kid?
Mm.
And I guess as well, all of our family from both my husband and my side
yeah.
are in Australia. So having that distance
yeah,
between two of us, sorry, between the families and us, meant that when we did, you know, have a call, it wasn't necessarily an immediate point of conversation. Mm. It was more around, you know, how's everything going and how's business and, you know, checking in on other topics rather than focusing on kids. So thankfully, yeah, I think that pressure didn't come for us,
yeah.
which I'm thankful for. And that was also an age factor.
Right.
We didn't feel like we were starting too late and that we were going to be too late.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. While you were, you know, trying to conceive, like, did you find anything that your friends or family that said to you that were particularly helpful or, you know, something that you really appreciated?
No, to be honest, at the time, it was a relatively personal journey.
Mm.
I spoke to my mum about it often and my sister as well. But no, it was just something that Josh and I were kind of dealing with together.
Yeah.
And it never honestly became a very big topic of conversation
yeah.
in our house. I think Josh probably didn't even know what I was doing until, you know, the positive test results came
oh,
in.
Wow.
And he was like, wow. And he was very occupied with doing his thing at the
right.
time. And I think when I explained to him the journey that I'd gone on, he didn't even know
wow.
or appreciate
yeah.
just how much I felt the
right.
acupuncture and the TCM medicine had helped.
Oh, wow. So you really did go on this whole thing like pretty much on your own.
Hands on.
Yeah.
I think, again, you know, like if it had taken much longer, then, you know, maybe I had got him, I would have got him more involved. But to be honest, it hadn't got to that point.
Right.
So
it and was, I guess it's like there's only so much you can do, right? Moral support, I guess, that's the only thing.
And I think if two people are focusing on it too much, which maybe that can also have an impact. So I wanted
True.
To make sure that to the point that anyone was stressing about it,
yeah.
that was kind of eliminated.
Right, right. As somebody who's gone through it yourself, what do you think is appropriate to say to a friend who's trying to conceive? Because it is like a big topic right now, right? That, you know, you always hear. The good thing is it is becoming a lot more not taboo, you
sure.
know, to talk about it. Of course, to normalize it a little bit and also for people to feel less alone. You know, you hear about, you know, friends having miscarriages, you know, having fertility issues and things like that. Yeah, so what do you think is appropriate to say to a friend who's trying to conceive?
I think definitely you need to know your audience. And as you said, if they're a friend, then you're going to know who it is that you're speaking
yeah.
to and how they will react to the information that you might have.
Yeah.
Any times that I have spoken to a friend about it, I think when they're at that point or juncture in their lives themselves, they appreciate hearing anything.
Yeah.
You know, whether or not it comes from someone like myself who has had a journey with acupuncture and TCM versus somebody that may have done what I had been proposed before, which
right.
was taking the hormonal medication.
Mm.
Everyone's different, and I think it's just about making sure that you have all the information. And for me, I felt like it was something that was worthwhile sharing because it had such a positive impact for us.
Yeah, yeah.
And the friends that I had spoken to about it took it on board very well.
Oh,
very,
wow.
Very positively.
So you have shared, like, you know, like...
Yeah, to the close friends,
yeah,
for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, yeah, for TC.
And I think quite a few of them may have checked it out themselves. Yeah.
And tried the acupuncture.
Yeah, and again, they would never... No one ever reported back. Because, again, it's like their own journey.
Yeah,
so it's a one kind of one-way conversation.
Right.
And at the time in their journey, at least... And I hope that maybe if I did give them that advice and that they did take it, that it helped in some small way.
Yeah. And I guess it's just important to remember that it's a different outcome for everybody.
Definitely.
I think, yeah, there are so many different like remedies. And of course, you have the medical, you know, way of doing things where you know, if you really don't have, you've already tried all the alternative ways and it still has worked. Of course, people have to go through the formal route, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, there are so many now, like massages and like, you know, like massage therapists who claim to have helped like thousands of women conceive after how long that they haven't had babies.
In fact, you've just reminded me. I do recall a period in time where I did start recording my temperature because I did have an app that was tracking my cycle.
Right.
And for one reason or another, I was told to just check your temperature first thing in the morning. Huh. So as soon as you get out of bed, don't put water in your mouth or anything. And I think I did it under my tongue. Wow.
With like
I do have a really bad memory.
With like a normal thermometer.
Just a normal thermometer because the theory was that when you're ovulating, your body heat does rise ever so slightly.
Okay.
And I remember recording it maybe for a month and a half and noticing a small peak.
Oh.
So
when you did notice a higher temperature, you just took it as, okay, I'm probably ovulating right
Correct.
Now.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And the app itself, and there's so many great ones out there, don't get me wrong. But the one that I found worked really well became like a very good, I guess, guiding stick on when you would be the most ovulating.
Right.
The highest chance of ovulating.
Mm.
And it also educated me, and I use it even today, to be honest, around just what cues in your body that you should look out for.
Yeah.
You know, the deeply personal things that happen to every woman, but we probably don't talk about, but certain cues in your body that just really signaled that you were ovulating or you were not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but I think people are taking more charge of their cycles nowadays, you
Definitely.
Know, like now we've got all these apps and stuff. And I know there was like research that recently came out about how because we go through this monthly, right, our cycles, we are only properly active in, you know, mood and productivity and all that probably for just a few days a month.
Yes.
Whereas the rest of the month, it's like you've got your mood swings, you've got your discomfort, you've got all those things going on. It's like we really need to cut ourselves some slack.
Yeah.
So people are really taking charge of that and actually tracking it in order to make the most of that productive week or something.
Well, I think as well, it's very empowering to know your body well enough to give it the breathing room and appreciate where it is at that point in time. There's an app that I use to this day called MyFlow, FLO. And the lady behind it is what I would say a very, phenomenal. And she's probably had some more groundbreaking like speeches around the topic because her research has shown that, you know, men wake up at the same time, like with the same level of testosterone every day, and it depletes at 3 o'clock.
Yes.
And they're the same person day in and day out, whereas women obviously have very different
experiences. You know, and the moment we act out, we're like, oh, the crazy, like, you know, lady.
Yeah. But her app just kind of tracks, like, you can basically log your symptoms, and then the very basic app itself will come back with like your body speaks. This is what might be happening and this might be ways to improve it.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's like a more in tune version of like reading your astrology signs.
In a way. Yeah.
But at least it's like something actionable that you can do, like, you know, with your body.
Definitely.
Yeah, for the day. The other thing that also was very interesting is that you shared about your very traumatic births for both your girls. You know, so after such a turbulent, like, conceiving fertility journey, and then you also had like a very eventful birth. How did those go? Start with your first one at least.
Yeah, I think every birth is eventful, and everyone has a story for sure. In my case, I felt very fortunate that our journey around conception was very relatively straightforward. I actually was one of those annoying people that enjoyed pregnancy enormously. I didn't have morning sickness. I was able to exercise. I felt like, you know, this was just a fantastic period of time
in
my life.
I'm a woman. Yeah. Look at what the female body can do.
And I guess for me personally, at least, I come from a family where for one reason or another, we've just always done a lot of exercise. And with that, it's a type of exercise, I guess, where you push your body to limits that other people might feel to be very uncomfortable. So when it came to birth, I kind of had it in my mind, well, I can do X, Y, and Z in terms of sports and endurance. Then there's no reason why I can't ask my body to do the same thing when it comes to giving birth.
Yeah.
Bearing in mind that my obstetrician at the time had explained that, you know, I'm a slight person with narrow hips, and my husband has a head circumference that's off the charts. So her advice to me was already looking at you physically and looking at his head size and doing
which is probably
going to
influence
the baby.
The baby's head size as well.
And she knew how keen I was on having a very natural birth. Her advice was, let's induce you because we don't want to get the head size to a point where you're going to have a vaginal birth and you're going to have internal damage.
Right. And at which point was this that you were induced?
She was 39 weeks. And her advice was like, look, just being very matter-of-factly, you know, how many friends do you have that you speak to that still exercise and don't pee? Or do a star jump and don't pee?
Yeah.
Or go on a trampoline, and don't pee?
Don't even talk
and
about it.
And I was like, well, no, I have no friends to talk about this. And she was just very realistic about what my future might involve in terms of exercise. And her description to me at the time was, you know, if you do want to keep running, there it would be wise to see if we can make this happen a little bit earlier. And Harriet at the time was showing full growth signs, so she was perfectly fine to come out.
And 39 weeks is weeks. Pretty safe. Yeah.
So we went down the induced route, which was going relatively smoothly. I went into labor. We went into the hospital at a cutoff time that she'd given us already.
Okay.
And once we went into hospital, inducing, as we now all know, is a bit of a slippery slope.
Yes.
And so because things weren't kind of progressing, she then, I think, gave me oxytocin.
Pitocin, I think it's called. Yeah.
And so that sped things along. And then I was getting to a point where I was physically quite exhausted. I wasn't necessarily in a lot of pain at that point, but she did encourage me to have an epidural.
Right.
Which was also something I was dead against. But her theory was it was going to relax me and help the process along to, again, be more natural, which is the goal that we were both working towards.
You still were looking forward to a vaginal birth.
Definitely. Yeah. I remember a point in the theatre, we went in a theatre, but at the birthing room where her name is Anne came in. And Anne reminded me that, well, no, informed Josh and I actually, that every time we were going through a contraction, Harriet's heartbeat was dropping.
Oh, wow.
And we were going into, I wouldn't say the 24-hour period, but it was probably up to 12 hours at that point
long.
At least. Yeah. Which is not uncommon.
It's not, but I mean, it's still a lot to go through and you're just like waiting around, right? And you're in pain and...
Well, I wasn't in pain at that point because I had taken the epidural on her advice.
But of course, still exhausted, right? I mean, like...
Physically, anyway, for one reason or another, I said to her, look, please just give me like 5 more minutes. I'm sure I can do this. And obviously, I'd, you know, taken whatever it is that they'd informed me to take at that point. So I probably wasn't thinking quite as straight as I should have. And fortunately, Josh was there in the room and he's like, Amy... this is not about you at the end of the day, you know, And that served as a very good reminder where I just kind of snapped out of it. And I was like, of course.
Mm.
So very quickly, he and I made the decision to go into theatre because of Harriet's heart rate.
Okay.
And I had never been into open surgery before in my life. And that triggering moment for me, I think, one, feeling like I was a failure going into for a C-section.
Yeah.
And two, going into my first ever surgery in an emergency environment was very distressing.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Because everyone, of course, has to say goodbye to their husband. They can't come into the room through the preparation. Right. I was hysterical.
Gosh.
And
just all kinds of emotions running all high.
Which is, you know, I'm sure, I hope that a lot of other mums can relate to what I'm about to say. But I remember crying so much that I had to ask them to, like, clear my nose for me through a nasal spray. Right, right. I was just like, oh, my God, I can't even breathe.
All the snot, like, built up in there.
Yeah, I remember just an enormous number of people being in the room, and I'm a very affectionate person. I really felt like I just needed someone to recognize that I needed a hug or a hand to hold, and neither of those things were there, which is no fault of those staff, but just something that I kind of had hoped for at the time.
Right.
We went into open theater. Mm. They started obviously operating, and again, I think because I was in such a state of panic and I was so upset about what was happening, they couldn't get Harriet out.
Oh, wow.
Because my stomach muscles had closed over. They were, I remember Anne at the time saying, Amy, you need to relax. Oh, and right. I was like, oh my God, I can't feel a thing. I don't know.
Yeah. You just were so tense that it was.
Yeah.
Wow.
So she had two grown men come over and basically push down on my stomach to kind of push Harriet out.
Right.
She had to increase the incision that she'd initially made, which is funny when it comes to the birth of Elizabeth. But she had to increase the incision that she made for Harriet to come out, which she did, and she was fine. She was then transferred to skin-on-skin contact with my husband, and I think I'd like to say that the story ends there, but unfortunately, because of the medication I'd taken, I was basically wheeled into a recovery room where I must have fallen asleep and become unconscious. And when I woke up, I looked around me and there were people with like broken legs and like an eye patch on. And
were you in the E&E?
I don't even know.
What?
I don't even know, but I came to and I looked around at the several people in the same kind of recovery room with me, and I was like, this doesn't look like a
maternity ward.
Yeah. And I looked down and, you know, I was like, yes, I've had the baby. My bump is not there. Where is my child?
Yeah.
And I remember it felt like, I'm going to say 6 hours or longer. It was probably 20 minutes in my lifetime.
Oh,
but for that period, no one could tell me
what was going
where
on.
My daughter was.
Mm.
And I knew that I'd had a daughter at that point. And no one could tell me. I feel like it was in one of those like Saving Private Ryan video, like movie moments. I started ripping out all the cords on my body and trying to stand because I was so confused and I was so worried. I felt like someone had stolen my child because no one could say, look, in fact, she's having skin-on-skin contact with your husband, who's 100 meters down the corridor. Everything's fine.
If somebody had just told you that.
Yes. So for however long it was, I must have looked like this absolutely crazy, drugged up, recovered new mother was trying to find their child. I really fought to find out where she was, to the point that they eventually rolled me into our ultimate room that we were in hospital for a couple of nights, and just saying like, just wait here, we'll go and get her. And then my husband walking in like glowing with happiness, and red raw with tears, and I'm like, what is going on, where have you been? And he's like, I've had skin to skin contact with her for this whole time, which was a real relief for me. I think for me, knowing that that had happened was a comfort. When I was connected with Harriet, like physically, and had the skin-on-skin contact with her myself, that entire period, that whole like I guess, trauma, however yes. you want to phrase it, just immediately erased from my mind. Actually, erasing is not the right word.
Yeah.
Was blocked yes, or was yes. put in a different container on this, different shelf somewhere yeah. else.
This is when the wave of relief that people talk about is
you know. And my focus was purely on, you know, making sure I could breastfeed,
right.
which I was very grateful I could do. Mm. And that was kind of then my focus.
Yeah.
That was a very long answer.
No, but yeah, I mean, of course, everybody's births are different.
Everyone would have tuned out by now.
No, I don't think so. I remember definitely like being obsessed with like labor stories after giving birth myself.
Yeah.
So like hearing about everybody else's ones.
Yeah. And I think for me, I wish I had spoken to myself before because I had always said in my mind, look, if natural birth isn't going to happen, a C-section is fine.
Yeah.
I said that,
yes.
but I never came to terms with it.
Mm.
And so when I went through it myself, all those feelings, and we can come to this when it comes to Elizabeth, kind of reared its ugly head.
Right, right, yeah. I mean, you just never know, right, in these situations. It's an emergency situation and you just never know how anything is going to go. Even if you plan for an epidural, even if you plan for a C-section, some people have it, like, you know, in and out of the theater in 20 minutes, you have the baby and say, okay, let's go home.
And
you
know? I fully anticipated that to be me. In terms of just having, like, a very, like, in my head kind of, this is how it's going to happen and this is what it's going to be.
Yeah, but no. You plan and plan, but
exactly.
life turns out completely the other way around. That's it. So with your second one, Elizabeth, it was also, you had a C-section for her?
I did. So both of my daughters were born in December. Terrible planning by Josh and I. Terrible, actually, because it's 18-21 right. and then obviously 25th for Christmas.
Oh, doesn't that mean that they were like Valentine's Day babies, maybe?
March,
all right, okay.
Oh gosh, it's a bit of an overshare, but it's my birthday.
No, there was this
please
very,
don't share that.
There was this very funny tweet going around saying like all the November babies need to remember that at some point your parents probably conceived you on Valentine's
Day. That's right. Oh my gosh.
So I'm a November baby. And I have to have that image in my head of like, oh no.
Oh, that's hilarious. With Elizabeth, we conceived her again around the same time, 2 years almost to the day, two years later. So she was also born in December. I stubbornly thought that I could still do a vaginal birth. So we went to another doctor just to get their advice around doing a VBAC, a vaginal delivery after C-section. And he was very good, but advised that, look, unfortunately for your due date, I'm not going to be around. So you'd have my sidekick.
Okay.
And I just said to Josh at the time, I was like, oh, gosh, maybe I'm just making too much of a deal with this. I really don't want to switch from Anne to this other doctor and then have that doctor's 2IC. Not to say that he was any less qualified. Yeah. It was just about the relationship you have
with
the doctor.
Yeah, of course.
And Josh comes from a family which are very, you know, pro-medication. So he was backing me in what I wanted to do, but at the same time was very happy to just have another C-section.
Right.
So ultimately, because of the planning schedules around people's Christmases, we realized that Anne would be able to deliver her via a C-section again. And she doesn't offer VBAC, so they're very hard. Well, not very hard to do, but it's hard to find a doctor that will do them for you.
I see. Okay.
In private practice.
Right.
So we stuck with Anne. And
where was this? Which hospital? If you don't mind
Mount Elizabeth at Orchard.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm. And so Anne was fantastic. She was more comfortable with C-sections herself. And Josh and I had made the decision that we would go with a scheduled C-section together. But in the lead up to Elizabeth's birth, when I talk about Harriet and how you kind of, that trauma, that memory that I'd kind of parked up on a shelf.
Yeah.
Or wherever it is.
Tucked it away somewhere.
Reared its ugly head. So I was probably 6 months in, visibly showing signs of being pregnant and just starting to think about the birth again.
Yeah.
And what I realized was that I was having this these feelings, and again, I don't know what to label them as. The best guess that I have is that I was feeling anxious around the birth.
Yeah.
I wasn't so worried about the impact on myself mentally. I was more worried about what impact that was having on an unborn fetus.
Right.
So, again, we didn't know the sex of the child, but in Elizabeth's case, I felt like the feelings were overwhelming enough that it didn't feel right to not try and deal with it and make sure that whatever I was feeling was not transferring to
her.
Right,
yeah. You just wanted to get ahead of it before, you know.
I did, and make sure that I wouldn't make kind of the same.
You just didn't want to relive that whole thing again.
So I did some research and I ended up finding a lovely lady in Bukittima. She was actually a couples counsellor, but I saw her one-on-one. And over the course of six sessions, I mean, I love this story because I went into her and I said, this is what's going on and this is how I feel and this is what I think it is. And she goes, oh, okay, well, that sounds nice. And I know you just said that, but let's just go back to over here. Mm-hmm. And so over the course of six sessions, I saw her and she was a wonderful sounding board, reminding me of things that had happened, you know, in my childhood and things that had happened, and not traumatic events, but just ways that I have always thought about myself and feeling that I had failed as a mother in going through an emergency C-section, which was obviously to the benefit of my child.
Yes.
I mean, I'm not going to say it's a ridiculous thought because there might still be mothers out there feeling that way.
Yeah. But is it no way a reflection of, like,
correct.
You know, yeah,
correct.
How you are a mother?
Yeah. I'd never gone to a therapist at this point in time. I felt like it was enormously beneficial. It was like a conversation that I couldn't have easily with Josh, not because he wasn't a good conversationalist or not understanding, but it was just nice to get another female and in this case, another mother's point of view.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, I remember on our sixth appointment and up until then, any time that I'd spoken about Harriet and our birth, I just cried. Aww. I couldn't help it.
Yeah.
I just would, like, I mean, and Harriet is a wonderful child. Mm. She was not causing me any issues other than sleeplessness. Yeah, I just remember always crying. And on the sixth session, I said, look, I am about to have birth. It's a scheduled C-section. Can we please, like, what is the final, like, nail in the coffin? Let's just deal with this and get it over and done with. Obviously, that's very hard when it comes to mental health issues and stuff.
You can't, like, stop
you can't
and then
stop
after
it.
Just, yeah, move on with life.
Yeah, yeah.
It's an ongoing, like, process, right?
It is. But I have to say, on that sixth session, she did a practice with me. I don't know how to frame this. But she did what is called, or what I understand to be now as rapid eye movement therapy.
Oh, okay.
And I can't explain it other than to say in that same session, when we would speak about Harriet, I would cry.
Mm-hmm.
And afterwards, she asked me the same questions and I laughed.
Wow.
And I think you have to be open to this type of stuff, right?
Like, right.
That sounds completely crazy what I just
said.
But
it's like a mindset shift that you had in that session.
Yeah, I mean, I can still remember it vividly. We sat very close together, so that to the point on chairs, to the point that our knees were touching.
Mm-hmm.
And then she would use her hands and her fingertips and literally just like tap the top of my leg, like near my knee, and then use her pointing finger to kind of move that I would then have to trace with my eyes.
Yeah.
And then she would say statements doing that over and over again.
Wow.
And for one reason or another,
it worked.
Well, yeah, I don't know what it was that
some
worked.
Some sort of hypnotism going on there.
I was like, yeah. Wow. And look, I know it sounds a little bit, you know,
take it how you will, I guess.
Yes,
yeah, some
yes,
people
take it
do,
as you, will, I
you
guess,
know,
is the nicest yeah, yeah, way to yeah. put it, because that does sound a little bit hoodoo.
Yeah,
right. But again, I've always come from a family where my mother would, you know, take me to a naturopath as a kid growing up.
Yeah.
So those things weren't uncommon to me.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I was
yeah.
very open and receptive to it.
Yes.
As opposed to being like, oh, this sounds
this
like
weird,
really,
yeah.
really weird, like witchcraftery or something. But yeah, no, it was a very happy experience. So that for me, I walked out of those six sessions, the final one being when we did the rapid eye movement therapy, and I walked into Elizabeth's scheduled C-section, very calm,
wow.
very prepared, and had a wonderful scheduled in a C-section, surgery. Which ended up seamless.
Nice.
To the point that Anne was very excited that she could fix the scar that she had to break, you know, the link longer to get the previous Harry. And I was I hadn't even thought about that, but thank you so much.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yay. I mean, of course, a bit of a triumph, right? After
it was
such a traumatic first time, and then I'll tell you the second time around where it's so much smoother.
Definitely.
A lot more, you
definitely.
Know.
And yeah, I have to say the scheduled C-section, had I not been such a
stickler.
Thank you. Mm. With Harriet, you know, maybe that would have been the better way for me to go.
Yeah. But, I mean, we live and we learn, right? Of course, yeah. I guess everybody does have that ideal birth in mind, and you want to be able to tell people like, oh, yes, I had a wonderful vaginal birth and it all went very well. We went home happily ever after with the baby. But no, it doesn't happen for everyone. And some of them do go the way yours did or even more traumatic. It's so nice to hear that you actually did seek help, through therapy and all that for you to have such a great second time experience.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, I know you have.
And I can talk about it now without crying.
Yeah. But that's amazing. I have to look into that REM therapy.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Oh, that's interesting.
I hope there's somebody out there that can relate. Otherwise, I'm just going to sound like a real.
No. I think, there are so many different, treatments and methods now, of course. Mm. So people are more open to it. Yeah. Do you think you would have done anything differently then? Or have you now accepted how
I've
it
definitely
all went?
Accepted how it all went. Mm. I think, when you do find a doctor that you end up working with, I probably didn't have my interests aligned with Anne from the very beginning. And, I probably should have either found a doctor which was more aligned to what I was after, or I should have aligned with her a little bit closer.
Right.
But either way, I don't regret anything that happened. Mm. I think both experiences have taught me that I would dare say that I'm a little bit stubborn, and I probably still am. That that it's nice to kind of give in to something else.
Yeah.
That, you can't control, and accepting that some things are far beyond your control.
Yeah, yeah.
And I, for one, am probably a control freak.
So you had to be put in your place for a little bit there.
I did.
Yes.
Yeah,
even though it was such a scary situation. But you overcame through, the whole thing, and now you're so much better with your two children.
Yeah, thank you.
Nice. Oh, it's so nice to hear. Oh my gosh, it's such a happy ending. Yeah. I had a pretty smooth first birth, I could say. I would say. But of course I had all of those thoughts in mind as well. Like, what if, I have to be prepared if it's emergency C-sec or if something goes wrong and I have to choose something else, so that's why from the beginning also I'm like, okay, even though I do want a very natural, as drug free as possible, but I have to be open to the idea of having all of those things ready as well. So I told my doctor, okay, I'll just like to have those on hand, just don't give them to me yet. If I ask for them, then maybe you can give it to me, the epidural, the whatever it is that you have, available for me to
as
have
long
some
as,
pain.
As long as the child comes out healthy,
that's
got to be the ultimate goal. And now obviously you're are we allowed to talk about that?
Yes, of course. Yeah, we already covered it in the previous episode. So, of course, the other one on the way. Just fingers crossed that it does go as well as it did the first time around. But again, I also have to remind myself, it might not. You know, every experience is different. Yeah, but I am with the same doctor as well, who is quite, pro-natural and UH. So, fingers crossed, everything goes well. Thank you so much, Amy.
Thank you so much for having me.
No problem.
It was lovely.
Yeah, it's been really nice. All the best with your endeavors. Of course, now you've got the meat club.
Yes.
If you'd like
you.
To share more about that, your third baby,
I guess you could say, right? Well, the meat club was kind of born around the same time as I was pregnant with Harriet, actually.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've been very fortunate that my husband has a restaurant chain here called Guzman & Gomez.
Mm.
And at the time of us moving to Singapore, I had transitioned to being a vegetarian, not by design. It was just by default. I found that the quality of meat that I could buy at the local supermarket or butcher was lacking. You have to take into account this is 9 years ago, so right. things have changed dramatically.
Pretty sure, since yeah, then. Of course, a lot has changed. Yeah.
But I've just found that the quality of meat was lacking, and the price points were just not aligning with my expectations from where I'd come from in Australia. Yeah. So you could either pay, you know, $20 for a supermarket steak, which to be very, very honest and with no disrespect, I couldn't even eat it. Like, and if I had a dog, I don't even know if I would have shared it with them, all the way to a, you know, a very high grade butcher cut, which was at a price point at that time in our lives that we just couldn't afford.
So
my husband, who was happily eating burritos, steak and chicken and everything else at the outlets, hadn't noticed that I was serving vegetarian food at home when we were pregnant. But I don't count myself to be a huge carnivore. I like to eat meat as and when my body speaks for it.
Just like a preference.
That sounds
thing.
So cool.
No. you do a lot of listening to your body. I love it.
I think at the time, well, I know at the time when I was, when I had Harriet, or pregnant with Harriet, I was craving red meat. And it kind of took us on a journey where we were looking at the cost of meat in butchers and supermarkets, and we saw that the price points didn't match the quality.
Yeah.
So we knew from our experience with Guzman and Gomez that we didn't want to have a physical retail store just because of the overheads we'd incur. And secondly, we didn't want to hire a lot of people because that obviously incurs a lot of cost.
As well, yeah.
And so we started with a purely butcher offering, so online beef and lamb initially. Thankfully, since then, it's expanded to include Australian chicken. We've got fish. We've got a vegetarian options now.
I know you have halal options as well.
Yes, yeah. Thank you. And yeah, so it's an online store where you can come and shop just for like a single purchase. But our bread and butter is really in subscription,
right?
Because like yourself with a family, sometimes you forget to kind of stock the freezer, and it's a good way where something comes automatically to your door,
right?
On a cycle, on a delivery cycle that you choose, so that you have a good source of quality proteins. We relaunched the website during COVID, actually, and our tagline is called "The Conscious Carnivore," just encouraging people to not eat meat with every meal every day.
Yeah.
You don't need bacon for breakfast and chicken for lunch and a steak for dinner.
Right.
And in fact, you can even go a couple of days without meat if that's your preference.
Yeah.
But when you do choose to eat meat, I think the important point is to know where it's come from and how it was reared.
Yeah.
And what it means to be putting that in your body. Because if you're going to be having, you know, like a meal that has, and this is totally up to people's preferences, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you are feeding yourself additional hormones and antibiotics that have come from a third source, it might not be the best thing for you.
Yeah, yeah.
So I, for one, just always like to know where things are coming from. Hence the meat club.
Yeah, of
the
course.
Home of the Conscious Carnival.
And you also did mention, you know, the sources that your meat comes from, all the animals have been reared, like, you know, very humanely, utmost welfare back in Australia or New Zealand, right?
So. Yeah, and I think we're very proud of some of the partners we work with. Our beef supply, for example, is a family-owned and run, fully integrated business in Queensland, Australia, where they own the land, the cattle, the trucks. There is a feedlot there because some of our products are finished on grain, so they're grass raised. But when I did visit the facility, everything is handled with care, and that the same family deal with the same cattle from birth to processing. And so it comes cryovacked from Australia, chilled, so you know that no one else is touching your meat, and it hasn't been opened before it reaches your door. And that's the same for all of our products.
So that's all about the Meat Club, everyone. Of course, I'm pretty sure this is not the first time you're hearing about it, because it is doing so well right now, and everybody's, you know, really into all these like subscription services. And of course, you can order online.
Anything to make your life easy.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and like, you know, online purchases and things like that. So thank you so much for bringing that.
Thank you for letting me share.
I'm so glad that you did go through, you know, what you went through in order for you to share with us, and also just probably make some moms feel less alone about their journeys as well. I mean, there's so much guilt that we put on ourselves as well, you know, when things don't go as planned or immediately. I mean, like, you were talking about having that shame and guilt on yourself the moment the baby came, or like the moment you were wheeled into the operating theater even before the baby
and,
came. So.
And that's exactly what we eventually uncovered in those six sessions, that I felt a deep sense of shame, that I had somehow failed.
Right.
I think that was what was the overwhelming feeling, which is unfortunate and very sad.
Yeah, super.
I didn't expect myself to feel that way.
Of course.
But I'm glad that at least someone could help me identify what it was. Because I think identifying it is half of it.
Yeah.
And then recognizing that, oh, that's what it is.
That's right.
And then you can talk about it. You can either in your head or with someone else. And doing that alone normalizes those feelings.
Yeah.
It's like it's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
It's okay to feel that way.
You're doing amazing, Amy. Don't let anybody tell you otherwise. You laid it all out on the table, and you took it by the horns, and you are really, you know, taking charge of everything.
That. That's lovely of you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
No problem. I think we've said thank you like 5 times now.
Well, I think we have. You can cut one into the front of the thing.
So that has been Sassy Mama Unfiltered. Thank you so much for listening thus far. We hope this helps you feel a little less alone on you know, your journey with either infertility, or if you're getting through a traumatic birth, don't worry, you are doing amazing, mamas. We are all trying our best, and that's what's important, I guess. As long as our children grow up happy and healthy, I think we'll be happy and healthy too. Thanks so much. This has been Sassy Mama Unfiltered. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you have any feedback or suggestions, do drop us an email at sassy@sassymamasg.com or find us on social media. We are Sassy Mama Singapore on Facebook and Sassy Mama SG on Instagram. This has been Sassy Mama Unfiltered.